I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic Airbrush Lex Tan. And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Melanie Murphy. Melanie is one of Ireland's biggest YouTube stars and a best-selling author. She speaks to me today about what it's like to live much of her life in the public eye, how she felt a million miles from home after making the big move to LA, and how uploading a video about her skin changed her life forever. Melanie was supposed to get married this year. She speaks to me about making the decision to cancel her big day and have a very small celebration instead, how she's managed to put the disappointment into perspective, and speaks to me about having memories of the day that never happened. Now, all of her focus is on her baby as she enters her third trimester, and we discuss what it's like to be pregnant during a global pandemic. I hope you enjoy. Melanie Murphy, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's so good to finally chat to you.
I know.
And I've been watching your videos and your content over the last couple of days, and my God, you have such a fascinating life and you've been through so much already. So let's just start with you telling us a little bit about you and how you became to be this huge YouTube star. And I was talking to James me about it yesterday, and we were saying, like, who are the big YouTubers in Ireland? It's Melanie Murphy and probably Rob Lipsett.
Yes, yeah, Rob is big in the fitness world, and I feel very on the outskirts because I do such niche stuff, mostly for women, mostly for people in their 20s and that kind of a thing. So my content isn't all that general, but because I started it when I was in university, I started it nearly 8 years ago now, which is mad to think about that I've been doing this long, because it became a job very fast for me, at a time when it wasn't something people really did as a job. Like, it wasn't a thing to be a professional content creator or anything like that. So I was doing a degree in teaching, and I started my channel because at the time I was really shy with public speaking, and my voice would kind of go all... I just couldn't project my voice. I'd get this rash on my chest, and I wanted to become a bit more confident and that kind of thing, and just have a little outlet to talk about the kind of stuff that, you know, at the time I was living with my dad and my brother, so it was just, you know, sausage fest around me and I couldn't talk about certain things. And it just very slowly became something that was just such a hobby for me. And in my final year, I had this video about acne go viral because I was just kind of showing my skin and stuff, and the response to that was so mind-blowing. Like, I think it has 18 million views, this one video, and it's I watch it back now and it's so, I get really cringy about it and stuff, but it did help a lot of people, so I've left it up. Like, I don't hide old videos and that kind of a thing. But after that, I suppose I just kind of kept making content that was interesting to me, though that has shifted and changed over the years. You know, I've delved a lot into my experiences with food and eating disorders, and then I might, you know, go through a phase where I just want to talk about sex online or kind of relationship stuff, and then sometimes I just want to make really lighthearted content, sometimes I want to challenge myself and I'll make a short film or something more artsy, and it's just become this amazing place I have to go, and especially this year with everything that's happened with COVID, I've felt very connected to people still, because I do have this kind of group of people who watch like all my stuff, and then some videos will reach hundreds of thousands of people who don't like follow actively, you know. And I just feel so blessed with it as a job, as a place to go. It's like a little place of refuge, and all the people that follow me are really similar to me, if you get me. You're probably the same, like the kind of stuff that you put out there will attract people on in the same mindset as you, or similar personalities, you know, so you do get to really love your audience in that way.
Yeah, it's definitely feels like a community of kind of like-minded people, and I suppose the people that follow me would be into self-care and wellness, and they have busy lives, so I can totally see what you're saying there. And just to put it into context for people, you have 646,000 subscribers on YouTube. Like, that's over half a million people. And do you feel pressure to keep putting out content?
Yeah, I used to say I didn't, but I think I was lying to myself, really. I have taken breaks now, like if you know, a month up to a month I think has gone by sometimes where I just don't have any creative energy, because I'm dealing with so much other stuff, or if I'm going through a bad patch, like obviously over an 8-year span you're gonna have dips in mental health, in just like life circumstances. I've had a breakup, and like just various things happening behind the scenes where I've wanted to retreat, but then at the same time I've wanted to kind of go there to vent, because I do feel this weight off when I get to chat through something and then loads of people who've gone through the same thing give me feedback or like their stories, and it's like a massive support group in a way. So I do have to like toe this line a lot, and nowadays I feel like if I don't upload like at least once a week, I worry that I'll lose what I have. And I know that's probably really silly, but at the same time, it is a job, and I have to, it's just one part of my job as well. Like the YouTube videos are, have kind of taken a back seat, which kind of sucks, but at the same time, I'm doing something that I really love, like writing as well. I've been a writer since I was like 8. I've always written. I've always loved telling stories. So I've had 2 book deals for 3 books, and I'm always juggling that with various things that I do behind the scenes as well, like talks and working on a course right now, like an online course. Like, it's always, you're keeping lots of balls in the air. And with the YouTube, like YouTube, what gave me everything I have, like the lifestyle that I have, the career, the security, the sense of just having somewhere always to go, and I really don't want to let people down. So I do sometimes I'll kind of just film something if I'm not that much in the humor, in the same way that if someone does not want to go into their job to in retail one day, they have to go in, you know. So I try and have that attitude about it, but at the same time, if I'm really not feeling it, or if it's a really bad day, I'll go easy on myself and I'll just do something else, or I'll plan a video, or I'll funnel it into something easier, because it's
almost like it's been your therapy though, in terms of, you know, you've spoken about how in college, like, you're quite shy and quiet, yet you had this outlet where you could talk to like-minded people, you could be your true self, you could show your skin and talk about that. And I suppose you just built up this network of really supportive people. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like they do really help me. I know like my stuff will help them as well, but they genuinely help me. So when I talk, like I'm going through my first pregnancy at the moment, and I'm about 6 months and 2 weeks or something, but I had a miscarriage when I was 19, and so at the start of my pregnancy I wasn't making any content around, you know, all these YouTubers that I follow will make, you know, finding out I'm pregnant, and then the next video is telling my partner, and then telling my family and telling my friends, and they make so much content around it, and I was terrified of losing the baby, that like I was trying to keep quiet about it, and then I was, oh, it was just such a weird time. So I have I do hold back a bit more, but then I know that if I ever want to to approach a subject on my channel that people will be there. Like, even, you know, I do lose some people if I, especially if I talk about anything political or whatever, but it doesn't matter to me because I want my audience to be like-minded people. I always believe in that like attracts like in life. And when you say, like, when you really work on yourself and get yourself into a really great place, you do attract like friends and a partner and the kind of people that just are in the same space, and then as a result you become happier again. So with my audience, like, that's why I don't make drama videos. I don't make videos about and it would be very easy to do the whole like really clickbait dramatic kind of stuff. I feel like I'd be really good at it, but I don't do it because I don't want numbers. I want to build a group of people that I can kind of go through the years with and share with.
I suppose over the last couple of weeks, I don't know why it's been coming up for me, but I have been thinking about my college days.
Aww.
And I went to DBS, I studied journalism, but before that I was in DIT and I studied tourism marketing, and it was a course that I just lobbed onto my CAA form and didn't even think twice about it, and then I got it and I was like, oh shit. And I was in Carl Brewer Street, and I remember so I had these like amazing mates, Susie and Claire.
Yeah.
And I drive in, so say we had like a 9 o'clock lecture, I'd drive in to town, like an hour into town, and then I'd text them when I was outside and I'd say, hey guys, are you in? And then two of them might write back and say, you know, we're not coming in today, or, you know, we're not going to bother or whatever. So then I wouldn't go into the lecture hall because I was too shy to walk in on my own.
I can't imagine you being so shy.
I know. And it's just like, now I'm 35. I would happily walk into a room full of strangers
and chat
and be perfectly comfortable.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show how much growing you do in your life.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And how different you are to when you were in college. And I suppose if people are listening and they're going through that in their life, to know that you may not always feel like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like I even noticed, because I've captured so many points of my life, even if say there was stuff going on that I wasn't sharing, but I do have videos from around that time, and I can see in myself how much I've changed over the past like half decade. Even just since I was like 25, I was still so desperate to I was always mimicking people that I watched, and I was always really trying to people please in my personal life and online, and I just wasn't being true to myself. I wasn't speaking the way I naturally speak. I wasn't talking about the subjects I actually cared about. I was trying to kind of fit a mold or fit like what people's expectations of me and stuff. And so you see yourself mature, you see yourself kind of when you're documenting that kind of thing, you know, because I don't think, like, you and I have so much stuff online over the years that when you jump back to you then in college, because I do have some snippets of me when I was in college. I was still coming out of eating disorders and still in therapy and all that kind of thing. And it's so strange to have that on camera and to it's a different person. And then I get people being like, oh, you've changed, or I miss the old you, you know, if they subscribed to me maybe 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And my answer to that is, I was like, I'm so happy that I've changed. Imagine being the same for your whole life and not kind of, because I'm so much happier now. And you do, it's an age thing as well. I genuinely think like I'm so excited about my 30s and 40s, because now the where I'm at now compared to when I was 20 is like, oh, like universes apart. And I feel like that's it. It's like, I don't necessarily put out videos where I'm trying to tell people, you know, advice videos where I'm trying to tell people what to do, because it's, you have to live through stuff, I feel, to really understand it. But if you're seeking content out, you know, if your pet dies, and you might go to YouTube and look for videos about grieving over a pet, or just general life stuff, that when you go looking for it, it can help because you're open to it. But when you're still in the midst of it, like say toxic relationship or something like that, it's not likely that a video about that stuff will help. But then, and even if I say one little thing like about like a red flag, even if one word or one line I say changes someone's life pattern for the positive, I just feel like it's worth doing. And I just think the growth we go through in our 20s is just amazing, and to capture it is like really, really cool.
Yeah, and you'll have those videos forever. And tell us about moving to LA, because for lots of young people, and I loved LA in my 20s. I loved getting over there for spending the summer in LA, and it's just such an exciting city. But my best friend Audrey moved there for a couple of years ago, and she said it's so different to live in LA than to go on holidays in LA.
Oh,
did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I had been there a few times just on work trips and stuff, and loved it. And I found it so, I just thought, anytime I thought about LA, I thought movies and just kind of just that it's a place where everything's happening, like everyone's going there to, everyone's really driven. Mm-hmm. When I moved there, I can't tell, like I'm not even exaggerating. I probably will never go to America again if I can avoid it, because I didn't really share much at the time about like the level of dissociation, I suppose, I was experiencing there, and just detachment from reality, because I couldn't cope with the stuff I was witnessing, and the atmosphere, and like the parties, like the way people were toward each other, the way everything felt fake. Everything felt like it was like all these people had just, now this is the people who I'm really talking about are people who moved there for a goal, not the people who are like from LA, because I did meet a couple of lovely people who are from there, and they experienced it quite differently. But I'm talking like the whole Hollywood circles, like the, you know, the parties where it's just you know, all the topless girls, and you're getting invited to like the Playboy mansion, and just like all this kind of, just so many people around you, and they're all taking drugs, and it's not me at all. Like after 2 months, I think I was my dad, anytime I was on Skype with my dad was really worried and concerned about me. He was saying, like, as if I just looked dead behind the eyes, because I'd go on these walks and I'd just feel like I wasn't living in my own life, and I was just watching someone else live my life. I was in a really like bad relationship as well, with someone who later was accused of rape and all sorts of things, and he was really manipulative, he was cheating on me the whole time, he gave me an STD, like it was a traumatic time that I didn't address that much online. But I think it's just because I don't like putting out negative energy, and I didn't want to make these grand statements about a place when I know so many people have an amazing experience there, and that was just my experience. And I don't know if it's because of the place, because of the people, because of the time, or what was it? Was it a combination of things? But I am a small town Irish girl. Like I grew up in Dublin, and I live in Skerries now. Like, but all my family and friends, most of my family and friends live here. And you walk down the town, and people just say hi to you while you're walking by them on the street, and you'll smile at each other. And then in LA, it was just, I felt it was very cold, it was very plastic, it was very, I felt as well a lot of my body image problems coming back, because everyone around me had surgery, and just like were kind of counting their calories, and it was just so opposite of what I am used to. So I just felt like it was kind of trying to put a jigsaw puzzle into the wrong puzzle, if that makes sense. It was just not for me at all. I would never go back. You couldn't pay me to go back there, because I have such bad memories.
Did you feel a sense of relief then when you were coming home that it was over?
I bawled when the plane was just getting in, and I got off and I was walking through the Dublin airport. I was sobbing. I just felt so much more. Do you know, it's something you can't really verbalize or explain, that sense of home, like what home means. Because for some people, home is a person. For some people, home is just like a building or a town. But I just felt so at home compared to over there. And even in London, like I would feel more at home than I ever did in LA. You know, like I woke up one day and there was just a really famous celebrity like downstairs in the house where I was living, and with a few other people. And I was so choked up. I didn't even want to go downstairs because I could hear the voice and I recognized it from my childhood, and then I'd hear all these stories that, like, you don't feel comfortable knowing because it's not your life and it's not your business, but then everyone's gossiping. And yeah, I just missed so much, just simple things like walking down the beach and moseying around the shop and going for the messages and the fizzy drinks, you know, just normality for me I had a very typical Irish upbringing, and just kind of, yeah, it taught me a lot. It taught me that I appreciate the small things in life, and people are a lot more important to me than, you know, money and all this stuff, because I was very lured in by the success and the lifestyles of the people there, and I really wanted to be around it to kind of see if that was like something I wanted to work toward, you know. And I just realized, like, some of the most miserable people I've ever met are the richest people I've ever met. And so money doesn't make you really happy. I know money can help, but I realized that my priorities are not kind of glitz and glam and that kind of big lavish lifestyle and kind of, you know, all these all-nighters and stuff like that. I like much more simple things. Just real. I'm just a home bird, and I just want to like have a very average, nice, normal life, quiet life.
Yeah, there's something so amazing about just having and I think we've learned that through COVID, is that it's just the simple things. It's going to Dunn's and getting all your food for a week, so you don't have to go back to the shops for 7 days, and instead of running down to the shops every day, you can go for a walk or spend some time in nature. It's just, I think it's really made a lot of us think twice about the busyness of our lives. And
yes,
2020 has not been the year that you were planning.
No.
And I've been watching the videos of your gorgeous husband Thomas, and you guys are soulmates. It's so obvious to see.
He's literally like my favorite person in the whole world. Like, I can't speak higher of anyone. Planned the wedding and all for this year, and COVID hit, I think, a week before. It was literally a week before the wedding was supposed to happen. And it was just so mad. I think I was shell shocked at first, and I had a bit of a panic attack about it, and, you know, threw something at the wall, and I was screaming and all that. And I got over it so quick, I think, because everything was put into context when it was someone, I think a family member, who couldn't go to his mother's funeral. And I was just like, what am I getting? So I know now, I'm not saying like we shouldn't be able to mourn our own losses and that our own losses aren't important. Like, at the end of the day, everything, you can't compare one person's pain to another person's pain, because they're all different and they're all different situations. But I think I had to apply context there to kind of come to terms with the fact that we were losing so much money and time and planning and a dream, like a dream you have since you're like a little kid, and that was being like just clicked away so quickly, and I just had to focus on why it was happening, you know. And ultimately, one person who would have been at our wedding turned out that she had COVID around that time, so it could have been it could have been a super spreader situation. And there was grannies there, and also, like, I don't regret cancelling at all. I have memories of a day that didn't happen. That's what's so jarring about it. And me and Thomas keep talking about it. Like, a song came on my Spotify the other day. It was what I was originally going to walk down the aisle to, and I just start bawling, crying, like sobbing, and it was just such a knee-jerk reaction. And I think I started having all these images in my head of stuff that didn't happen because I lived the day through so much while planning it. And So I really feel for other women and men, obviously, around Ireland who had to cancel their weddings as well. And, well, just around the whole world, like, look at how many people were in the same situation as us in the end. So horrible.
I think you just articulated it so well, and it's hard to understand how people have felt in cancelling their weddings when, you know, I've already had my wedding day, and you say to people, oh, well, listen, it's only a day. And but it's not. It's so much more. But there's something you said on Instagram. You said having a strong marriage is what we really care about. A fancy wedding is a privilege, a bonus. Love is all we need through these difficult times.
Yeah.
Amazing words. And what was the, I suppose, the moment? Did you make the call to cancel the wedding, or was it government guidelines that forced you to do it?
So the way it happened was, I just want to remember the exact chain of events. So first they said about the 100 people. And I think at that point we were kind of feeling like, should we cancel? Should we not cancel? And then we figured, look, this is the actual government guidelines. Like, we will listen to what the guidelines are, and we felt okay with going ahead with it with 100 people, because other people were doing it as well. And at the time we didn't know anyone who was sick, and we didn't really know very much about it. And I think I was mentally playing it down for a very long time anyway. And so we were going to go ahead with it, and that was really awkward then, having to message, you're having to pick who do you want there more than others. And it's such an awful thing to text a friend and be like, look, you know, we have to cut off, say, 30 people. And for them to know then that they were less important than other people, you know, it's horrible. Mm. This having to create a hierarchy that wasn't there in the first place, you know. And so we did that. But then they came out and said they weren't banning weddings, but they were essentially asking people to not go ahead with them, kind of groups, parties, house parties. Their phrasing was house parties and something else. And I think we saw that and we were like, well, if they're discouraging a house party, they're not going to want it's not going to be a good thing to go ahead and have a wedding anyway. And so we immediately, as soon as that was announced by Leo, we immediately cancelled it. And we looked at each other and we just decided it together straight away. And it was so, because the following day was the registry office, which originally was going to be us just driving in, signing the stuff and in our, like, you know, our track suits, like our active wear, and then just going home. And we weren't gonna make, because we didn't want to ruin the big day, so we just we're treating the official marriage part as like just because
a formality, almost.
Because we wanted to think of that as happening at the venue, but the way it worked out, it just was easier for us. Because I want my auntie was going to marry us, because she's like qualified to do official weddings and stuff. So we really wanted like the family member marrying us and all that. So, but in the end, then we had like a few hours to decide. Oh no, I'll try and get dressed up a bit and the lads will wear their suits. And then his mom that morning went and got me a little bouquet, like all they had left in the flower shop. And we had to fling the thing together. Like, so many things went wrong as well. Like, the music played down the aisle, so my dad got to walk me down the aisle at least. Like, that was always my biggest thing. And then, because he had a couple of close brushes, like he had a heart attack and he had a really serious operation as well. And that was so important to me to have that. I thought, like, if anything happened to him and I had to have a wedding without that, I think I would just be like like walking down the aisle, just because he's like one of my best friends, you know. Well, he is my best friend, but apart from my husband. But we made the most of it. And then that evening, like, I had a Chinese, Thomas had a pizza. Like, it was just
ordered different takeaways, so they probably arrived at a different time, so you didn't even have your dinner together.
And the weirdest part though was, like, I think the end of the night I was getting a little bit sad, because I stopped drinking like a year ago now, but obviously I was pregnant, so I couldn't have even had one glass of champagne if I wanted to or anything like that anyway. But they were all, you know, drinking and celebrating and kind of drowning the sorrows a little bit for what we lost. But by about an hour in or 2 hours in, I felt quite detached from everything that was happening, because I wasn't, you know, when you're not drinking, you're not on the same level. And that's been the hardest thing for me with giving up drink, has been feeling like the fear of missing out feeling. And even though I it's been the best decision I've ever made, and I'm probably not going to go back to drinking. I've committed to another 5 years off it now. So But that night, I was sitting there. They were all like, you know, far along singing. It was well into the night. And I'm just sat there like, oh God, like, how has this gone by so quick? And now I'm not even able to kind of, because, you know, at a wedding, at least I would have been able to dance. There would have been music. There would have been other people not drinking there. So the whole thing just went by so quick. And the thing is now, at the time we were like, oh, we'll do it again. But and now I don't feel like a need to do it again because we're married. Like, I don't think it's so strange to explain, but I just feel like we missed the boat on it. And I he's so keen to do the exact day as planned in a few years, whenever, after I've had a couple of kids and that kind of thing. But I don't know. I don't think I'm that pushed on it now. I don't really know what to do.
I'd say maybe when you have a few kids, it would be so special to have them there at your wedding.
Yeah, we could do like a renewing, like a renewal of the vows or something. That would be nice.
And tell us about your pregnancy. You're so beautiful. Uploading some bump pictures. You're absolutely glowing. But you did speak about morning sickness and how tough it was. And I suffered really badly for about 16 weeks with morning sickness.
Oh, did
you? God, it ended one day. But like what you've said in your video, is like absolutely wiped out, no energy to get off the couch because you're growing a human.
Yeah, it's such a strange, I heard people talk about that, but you don't really think about it much. You're just like, oh well, that's just what happens. But then when you're going through it, I was just thinking, how do women with regular 9-to-5 jobs where they have to leave the house, and how do they do it? Like, I've got such a newfound respect for like females. Like, I can't overstate how wrecked you do be. Like, I was just like lying across the couch, just feeling so dead to the world. And you're nauseous all day. Like, I always thought you woke up, you puked, and that was it. Because you hear morning sickness, like, duh. I was even waking up in the middle of the night, like, nauseous. And nauseous to the point where, you know, as if you have the bit where you have the saliva building in your mouth where you're about to throw up, but that's just for hours and hours, and then it's putting you off your food, but then you also want to just eat stuff that'll feel like it soaks up the sickness, like just carby, cheesy, that kind of stodgy stuff, you know. And then, but then you're also like, oh, but the baby needs nutrition, so I can't just eat that. And it's just such a weird time. But my second trimester was, oh my God, I just was on air. Like, I didn't feel, there was times where I forgot I was pregnant unless I felt a kick, because I felt so normal. So that was it was like a switch for me. And I know not all women get that. Like, some women have that sickness right up to the end, and some women never get the sickness at the start even. So it's such an individual thing. And that's why I think it's important for more women to talk about pregnancy online, because then at least you can find someone who has the same experience as you. If there's more voices out there and there's more different kind of depictions of pregnancy.
Yeah, I remember I used to like hide. We had this live room in Spin where bands came in to record, and I used to go in there. I used to have this huge big scarf that was like a blanket, and I'd literally hide under it.
Oh my God.
Lying on the ground in the dark with the aircon blasting. Just like, this is like, it's such a lonely place to be.
Did you have any mad craving, like any really weird craving or a thing that you really, really loved?
Yeah, you know, the San Pellegrino, like lemon fizzy drink.
Even on a non-pregnancy day, that's just, amazing.
I used to love that, and I used to go out. I remember, like, Darren and Hannah were sitting beside me during that time, and they really carried me through my pregnancy and, you know, made me laugh so much. And it was really nice to have those girls around me every day, because even though they hadn't been pregnant before, I felt like they just totally got it. And they used to go to the shop and get me popcorn, and they just kept feeding me all the time. But I've been also thinking recently about my pregnant body and how much I loved being pregnant and having that bump, and just me and Pia together, because I knew I was having a little girl, and I knew we were going to call her Pia. So it was always like we were just like secret best friends.
Yeah,
and
you're never,
she's a girl nobody else did.
You're never on your own. That's like something I think I'm really going to miss. And I've had some other like YouTube creators that I'm kind of online friends with and stuff reaching out to me who, like, they've had their kids and stuff, but they're messaging me saying like, oh God, like, even just seeing your videos or your pictures making me crave like being pregnant again, because they miss that. The second they said that, as soon as the baby comes out, you actually miss it being inside. And my mom said that to me as well. She said it feels like when it's in there, it's so protected and safe, and it's and part of you, and you do feel. I've had so many strange days where I'm just like, I've never felt better in my body, and I don't know what it is. Like, it's maybe it's like a combination of the fact that it's doing what it was designed for, but I don't know. I think because I was so worried about not being able to get pregnant as well, every minute of it I'm trying to really embrace. And even like if my like kind of that, you know, like that body dysmorphic kind of voice starts pointing things out to you in your head, like, I'm just doing so much to ignore that and to focus on all of the amazing parts of it. And like, my husband is so, he loves my body pregnant, like, he keeps complimenting me all the time, and that is definitely making me like focus on it in a positive way as well, because he's always just saying like how it's but I've always been like that. When I'd see pregnant women, I'd be just staring at them, like, there's just something something so lovely about it. And then I think the way media was when we were growing up, there was just this the way it was spoken about was just like as if to instill in women to be terrified of being pregnant, or if they didn't bounce back, or if they, you know, to almost like dislike their pregnant bodies. Whereas I do feel it's a lot more celebrated now in social media rather than in like magazines, because in magazines it was always like, I do you remember growing up like with the gossip magazines, and they'd have pictures and it was like really unflattering, and they'd have a circle around someone's cellulite, and they'd be like, you know, gained so many pounds, and why so and so is so miserable in her pregnant body. And I felt so scared of getting pregnant for a while on how I would feel about myself. But at the end of the day, like, I would happily have multiple children. I love it, and I feel like it's going by so quick because of COVID, and I'm trying to slow down my perception of time all the time with self-care stuff and all, because it's just going by, because I'm like, every day is the same. I can't meet many people and that, so.
And is being pregnant in COVID, like, obviously you have nothing to compare it to, but is there heightened anxiety there? Like, are you going to have to give birth wearing a mask? Like, are they speaking to you about these sort of things?
So, I'm giving birth in Our Lady of Lourdes in Drogheda, and they have a midwife-led unit there. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's on the public system as well, and they've two rooms where there's, like, a birthing, like, there's a pool where you can do, they were going to bring in the births, I think, in pools again, but because of COVID, it's been pushed back. But they let you labour in the pool, and then they have, like, they dim the lights, they have aromatherapy stuff, they have speakers. Yeah. It's amazing. It's kind of like a home birth, but if anything goes wrong, they can just wheel you into the hospital area. So it's really perfect. Now, the way to give birth in there, you just have to, there's certain things, like if you have certain medical conditions like diabetes or anything, I don't think they let you give birth in there. And then you have to keep your weight in a certain bracket and just other things like that, and you have to want a natural birth where you only use gas and air. So that's why I think I think that's why they don't have more rooms, because a lot of people do elect for epidurals and cesareans, and it's everyone's, you know, own choice. And like, I'm doing the Positive Birth Company's hypnobirthing course, and it's so helpful to just learn what your body actually does during birth, and like that it has been treated like this medical emergency in general, and that attitude going into it can set off a lot of chain reactions that lead to complications. And so it's really interesting, and I wonder, will I end up having an epidural, or will I be able to like kind of give birth there or whatever? But no, so when I've been in, I have had to wear a mask on my appointments, and but they haven't said anything yet about when it comes to I'm due in early October, and I'm not sure what it's going to be like at that point. But I think did they have for a while where partners couldn't go in, but But then they changed it back because people, professionals were coming out saying, look, like, it's invaluable to have a birthing partner. And, you know, the fact that as well, you're isolating together, or you're, if one of you is sick, then both of you are going to be sick, or whatever. So it makes sense to just let the couple go in together. But I'm not actually nervous about catching COVID. I assumed I had it earlier in the year because my partner, he's a pilot, so he was flying over and back to Italy a lot, and I had a really bad cough, I had a really bad cold. I rang for a test and they said, you can't have a test because you have to be exposed to someone for 15 minutes who's been to China or whatever. And I was just like, what? I said I had a sore throat as one of the symptoms. And at the time they were like, nope, that's not a COVID symptom. And now that's been added to the list of COVID symptoms. So I may have already had it, but I'm not that scared of getting it because I've been reading a lot of the research and it doesn't seem to be a more of a threat to pregnant women. Like, as if, you know, if you're pregnant, you're, even though we're in a risk category for it, there haven't been like this kind of explosion of deaths of pregnant women or babies or anything like that. And I have quite a strong immune system. So I don't want to pass it to anyone. That's the thing. So like, I'm still being really careful, but I'm not living with this kind of constant fear of it or anxiety. Yeah. I'm not walking. I'm more so wearing masks and things like that to be respectful of others, but I'm not actually, I don't have, I just don't believe in living in constant fear of anything in life really. Because I used to have bad anxiety disorder and I went through so much therapy to deal with when you have anxiety or fear about things that aren't in your control. It's just not very, it's not a very useful feeling or emotion. And it can, especially when I'm pregnant, I don't want to be stressed. So I'm doing a lot of work to try and make sure that I don't consume too much, you know, headlines and that kind of a thing. But yeah, it's just the saddest thing, like what you were saying when you were pregnant and you had your friends around. That's been the difficult thing, is not having my friends, because I have some really close friends around here that I'm seeing them now, but from a social distance, like we haven't hugged, they haven't been able to touch the bump, like, so that has been really hard, because the only woman that is really around me that has given birth is my husband's mother. So I've just not been able to really, that's why the internet's been amazing, because I can just turn to the internet and be like, blah, 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 blah.
And what are your self-care techniques? Because I think a lot of us over the last couple of months have kind of stepped up our self-care a little bit just to help us cope. So what are your favorite things to do to mind yourself?
Yeah, I break self-care into like so many different little kind of segments, I suppose, because there's all obviously like there's all the physical stuff you can do in terms of, you know, I go for a lot of walks. I use guided meditations on YouTube. I actually made one recently because I was like getting this crazy. I was listening to so many of them. So I love doing meditation. I love, like, I feel like exercise in general is a brilliant thing to, even when you're pregnant, like just going gentler, you know. But like eating food that nourishes me, but then also like if I'm craving something, like letting myself have it, having positive self-talk around stuff like that. Watching funny films or comforting things, I think that's definitely one. I read that recently that people who are prone to anxiety will rewatch TV shows and movies an awful lot because knowing what's going to happen is a comfort. Like it's like you're not, it's such an interesting angle, isn't it? But I that's what I've always done as a, when I'm really when there's something big going on in the world, I will reach for, like, you know, stuff that I've seen a million times. And
oh my god, I do that too. That's so, I never knew that.
I know, it's really interesting. So things like that. And then but I do, like, I love having a bit of a pamper. Like I always, like, I love just smothering myself in body butter and like face masks and all that kind of stuff. Though the real self-care for me is in kind of protecting my space, my bubble, like knowing my limits when it comes to how many people I can reply to in a day. And like I don't go on my phone a lot. Like I'm actually really, I have all my notifications turned off. I do check in, obviously, because I work online. I do check in, but I'm not glued to my phone. I read, I do things that are, you know, in nature. Like I think oh, it's so important to feel connected to things and to people and to really look at your lifestyle in a full rounded way, rather than just thinking, oh, if I pop on a face mask, then I'm doing self-care, or if I have a bubble bath, then I'm doing self-care. Because so much of it is like, what destructive things are you doing? Like, what are the things? And one of those things for me was every day I was Googling the death count of COVID, or I was, watching... I used to like watch a lot of the videos about drama, like YouTube drama or whatever, and it was so destructive, and I was just like, why am I doing this? It's not good for me. And so I like actually having discipline with those things is the hard part of self-care, but I think that's the more important part of self-care.
Yeah, it's so like amazing what you say about self-care, and it's not just popping on a face mask, it's about asking yourself what you need on a certain day. I think is so important, and just going with that gut feeling. Is that going outside? Is it not, you know, getting back to people straight away, putting down your phone, watching your favorite movie again for the 15th time? Yeah. such amazing advice there, and I have absolutely loved every second of this chat.
Oh, same.
Thank you so much for your time. And
oh, you're so
I'm
lovely.
So excited to see how everything is going to play out for you over the next couple of months. Enjoy your last trimester.
I will.
Enjoy your beautiful baby, because they grow up so fast.
I look like your pictures with Odd. It's just, I have fever right now. Like my whole feed and everything that I'm always looking at is like mothers with their kids. And it's just so exciting to me. I can't wait. I think it's just like we thrive on new experiences. And I think having a child, like me and my husband had this chat, having a child is like the ultimate set of new experiences. Because, like, you know, we've done a lot of travel, we've done all the mad nights out, we've done so many things in our 20s, and now like the idea of having a child is like the most exciting thing for both of us. Just seeing it having its first smile, having its first bit of food and its first word, and like there's so many firsts. So yeah, I'm not long behind you. I'm so excited.
Enjoy every second.
I will. Thank you so much for having me on as well, and thank you for everyone, to everyone who listened to us rambling on.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more of my story, you can follow me on Instagram, georgie.com.